How many of you are nervous for Deb? That was the Deb 2 years ago that you needed to be nervous for a little bit. I don't know that it's the Deb that you need to be worried about right now. This is the first time that Deb, Chad, maybe you better come up and, it's the first time Deb has really shared publicly. But if you're wondering who the people are that maybe you don't know on a regular basis, they're people who have been just as involved in loving us, praying for, supporting us in every way. So thank you for being here too. This first question is not about leukemia, okay? First question may seem out of left field, but hopefully you'll understand as Deb talks a little bit. Deb, what is your least favorite movie that you've ever seen?
It was the Emoji Movie, and it was like it was the longest, most craziest movie. I thought it would never, never end.
Yeah. She had taken our granddaughter, Kate, who loved the movie. My mom and I had gone up to Janesville to visit some friends that we've known for decades, and they were going through a struggle. And Deb was going to spend the day with Kate, and they were going to spend some time in the afternoon going to a movie. So when I came home from Janesville, I came home just knowing that I was going to walk into the two of them telling me, "You should have gone to the movie with us. This is the greatest movie ever." I walked upstairs to the loft area. Kate was on the computer, and I didn't even see Deb at first because there's a couch there. And then all of a sudden, like somebody coming back from the grave, Deb sat up. And she said to me, "I feel horrible. And that's the worst movie I've ever seen in my life." I couldn't understand that because she always loves movies with Kate. But what we found out in a few days was there was a reason for her feeling bad. She had experienced some symptoms a couple days before that and a couple days after that. So, Deb, tell us, what were the initial symptoms that you felt?
My first one was I woke up in the morning and I was just drenched with sweat, like just crazy. And I thought, oh, man, are those hot flashes coming back again? I can't believe this. And it was hot, so I was like, maybe this is what it is. This is just really weird. And then after the Emoji Movie, I started feeling kind of tired. And I had a little bit of fever. And I had like a little bit of pain right up here that kept on coming. But I thought, oh, I don't think it's my heart or anything like that. My legs hurt really bad. I put all these little things on my legs to help, and that wasn't helping. And then on Monday, Sunday, came to the anniversary of Sunday. It was our first picnic, and I remember taking my temperature and make sure I was okay. And I came, and I kind of felt okay, but that night again, I didn't feel good. And we were planning a trip to Colorado to see our friends. And then I noticed these little tiny purple spots on my arm. And I looked them up, and it really wasn't anything. So I thought, on Monday, I'm going to go to the doctor, see what he says, and see if I'm okay to go on this trip. The doctor, he said, "You look good. You look great. Go for it." So that was our plan.
So we don't want anybody to misunderstand about the doctor. He's been mine and Deb's doctor for a number of years. This was the end of July. In August, he was retiring. And so some people said, "You went to see your doctor," and they didn't, pay attention. Just a couple months before this, he had done complete makeup on Deb's blood work. And he had called her with the report, "Everything is great." So Deb's coming in not long after that, saying, "I'm not feeling good. I'm worried about maybe this thing historically that I've had with my heart. Maybe that's it." And he said, "It is not that, Deb. You and Tim go and have a great time." So the roller coaster ride then was, Deb said her legs were hurting, and I said, "Why do you think that is?" And she said, "Well, I went to Body Pump, and they did the squat track, so I think it's that." She had gone out running, and she thought maybe it was that. And then when I came home from Janesville and the movie was there, I thought she was getting the flu. That's really what I thought was going on. She'd get a little fever at nighttime. Then the morning we'd wake up, she'd say, "I feel great." We were leaving on Tuesday morning. On Monday night, I said, "Deb, if we can't go, it's no big thing, right?" She had a slight fever, and I woke up the next morning, and Deb was already up and saying, "Hey, let's go. We're flying out early to Colorado." So I'm thinking, we're good. We get to Colorado. Kenny and Lisa pick us up. Deb says, "I'm feeling a little tired, so let's not go on one of these major hikes. Let's just go to someplace beautiful." So they drove us to Breckenridge. So how many of you have been to Breckenridge, Colorado? It's just a beautiful town to be in, to walk around. So we're walking around, and I've never been there in the summertime. And Deb was so excited about me being there to see the beauty of the mountains when it wasn't snow-filled. And we're walking around, and Deb's getting tired, like she's really getting tired. So at one point, there's even a little panic in her face, and that's unusual for Deb. So why don't you tell us what was going on? We had stopped to get something to eat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were going to different stores, and I remember going up a flight of stairs going, "Ooh, this is really, like, tiring me out." And I remember I had to go to the bathroom, and there was, like, all these stairs. I thought, "I'm not going to go there. I'm going to go to another one." And then they said, "Let's stop at this hamburger place." So there was stairs there, and we started going up, and I thought, I'm almost going to pass out. I couldn't breathe or anything, so Lisa goes, "I'm going to go get you the oxygen from the oxygen bar." So she runs down
there. So do you notice there's no oxygen bars in Illinois, right? But they're everywhere in Colorado.
And so she brought the oxygen up, and I tried it, and I started feeling better again. I remember I ate and was hungry, and then we just started driving around, and I felt great. And then we finally got back to their house, and I said, "I'm just going to lay down for a little while." And Tim and Kenny were going to go out and walk the dog. So I went, and I thought, "I'm going to take my contacts out." And when I went to take my contacts out, there was this huge bruise on my arm. And I'm like, that's really weird. So it kind of got me scared. I kind of started crying. I said, "Lisa, what do you think this is?" And so she called her mom that was a nurse. And she said, "My mom said you probably should just go to a regular hospital that has the emergency room just to make sure. Don't go to emergency room." And I thought, you know what? I want to go and just get this figured out since it's the beginning of vacation. So I called him, and I was kind of crying because it just kind of threw me. And he came back, and then we went to the emergency right away.
So let's identify the medical professionals in the room. If you're a medical professional, would you put your hand up? Okay, we got a ton of them. No, wait, I don't think everybody raised their hand. Medical professionals, please raise your hand. Durkee, raise your hand. Thank you. All right. So you will understand this. I dropped Deb off and went to park. She went to the desk, and of course they're going to ask name and then what are you feeling. So she said shortness of breath and a little bit of pain in my chest here. So can you imagine what happened? Like, when I got in there, they said, "Your wife is in this room," and I walked in, and the room is full of people. Yes? Yes? You, yes, yeah. I think you're talking about something different than I am, Adam. You're talking about shortcuts, okay? I got in the room, and there's this team of medical professionals surrounding her, and they are hooking her up, and they're looking at me like, "We know you're her husband, but could you please get out of the way?" Right? So you know what they were thinking. They were thinking Deb's heart. And we stayed for quite a while, and they did tests on the heart that I had never even heard of, you know. And then they kept coming in saying, "No, the heart looks good. You know, we think all that's good." And then, I don't know, why don't you pick it up then? Because what do you remember at that point?
I just remember them saying, "It might be a blood clot on your lung. We're looking at that. We're just not so sure." And then finally, the doctor came in and said, "You're a mystery to us."
Okay, so let me stop with the medical. What does that mean, medical professionals, when you say to somebody, "You're kind of a mystery to us"? Does it mean this? We kind of think we know something big is going on here. but we're not sure what it is. Because then the next words were, we're gonna admit you to the hospital. And then they're going to do more tests. So that's what they did. And it was about 1 o'clock in the morning that they admitted us to a room. They got Deb in the room and got her settled. And they put us in the heart part of the hospital. Then they started, running more tests. But a doctor came in the middle of the night, like when Deb finally got settled. And so what do you remember about that, Deb? Like, what do you remember that doctor? I know that was not, like, you're clearest at that point.
I just remember she had a piece of paper, and then she started going down different things that they had found. You know, we saw this in your chest, and, you know, we saw a couple of things. We saw these blast cells, and they were pretty high. And your white blood count was pretty high. And I think I was, like, in a shock kind of mode. And then she said, we're really looking at leukemia. And when she said that word, this is where I felt God's presence. I just felt, I absolutely believed with all my heart I was going to be healed. I just knew it, that God was going to use this for something. And I just had peace, and I felt God's presence. And then after she was done, I went to sleep, and Tim was on his cell phone looking up everything on leukemia he could find.
Yeah, I want to tell you the difference in Deb and me at that point. That the doctor came in and said, we're looking at, it could be a viral infection or a bacterial infection. Maybe it could be attacking your heart. And she talked about all these things for like a minute each. And then she said, or it could be a blood disease. And Deb goes, like, what does that mean? And she goes, it could be like a blood cancer and like a leukemia. And then she spent about 15 minutes telling us about that. So I've been a pastor in hospitals enough to know if they mention this, like, be aware of it, mention this. But then when they talk about this, like, really pay attention. And I could not believe it. Deb goes, okay. The doctor leaves the room. Deb lays down and falls asleep. And later on, I said to her, like, were you just that tired? Like, we've had months to talk about this and look back on it. And she goes, no. And what she just said to you is what she said to me. Like, as soon as the doctor said that, she felt this peace in God's presence, like this real peace in his presence. And I'm glad she did, because I felt peace, but I felt like I needed to get educated. So I Googled leukemia, and there was a checklist that had 11 things. And Deb had 8 of those 11 things in the last few days. So then for me, this was before they confirmed it, I thought, okay, they're going to come back in and tell us this. And then I started getting a little bit of education that you medical professionals have, like that there are different types and what do you do about those, you know, and went everything from treatments all the way to bone marrow transplant. But in my mind, when I fell asleep, I was pretty sure that the doctor was going to come in and talk to us the next morning very specifically. And that's what happened. It was a new doctor because the shifts had come in. And when the doctor came in, he said, I'm just going to let you guys know right from the beginning, we're only looking at one thing, and that's leukemia. And we're just trying to now figure out what kind it is. So how do you remember the last couple of days? Because when you tell me, it's more of a fog to you.
Yeah, I don't remember a lot in Colorado. I just remember getting the bone marrow biopsy, being on a special diet, getting a lot of transfusions for my platelets. That's like part that I was just really foggy. So when he says things, I'm like, oh, I don't even remember that.
So Kenny and Lisa Flickinger were there. We've been friends with them for a long time, lifetime. And of course, you know, they, let me just back up a second and say this. The hospital that we went to was the closest one. The emergency room was the closest one. Little did we know that it was the regional cancer center. And so they moved us from the heart section down to the oncology section, which it wasn't a big hospital, so it was, you know, maybe 20 rooms apart. But then everything shifted for us. But in the moment that they told us that it was sure leukemia, it was just Deb and myself in the room. We didn't know Kenny and Lisa were standing in the hallway, that there was a sliding door that they would come through into our room, but they were waiting right there. And so two things happened at this time, like two really big things happened. Deb had felt the presence of God, but as soon as the doctor left the room, I felt like we needed to pray. And it's going to be a shock to you. I was crying so hard that I couldn't pray. Kenny and Lisa walked in right then. And man, Kenny took over like that. He laid his hands on us and started to pray. And man, it was like an angel there, present and praying for us. But then Lisa, any of you know Lisa Flickinger, she just got busy then, right? And one of the things she did was she had brought this daily devotion in for Deb. It's called Jesus Calling, Enjoying Peace in His Presence. So how many of you have ever done a devotional by Sarah Young? I know some of you, and you know when she writes, it is about page after page about God's presence. So Deb took this book and she was in it. And it had this theme of presence of God that I don't think we knew. We just thought it was something Lisa brought in. So Deb, my next question to you is, as the reality set in, how did you start to experience God's presence? Because this became a big thing to you.
Well, I was in a room by myself, so I was isolated. So that gave me a lot of time to pray and read. So I started with this book, and then I didn't have my journal yet. I was really sad because I'm a journaler. So I would write in this book a little bit about what was happening. But I would start reading, and I marked a couple little things that just really stood out to me. And then there's verses under it so that I would write all the verses out. And it was like, when you thank
me. What
date
is it?
This is in January, though. When you thank me for how I am answering your prayers, your mindset becomes much more positive. Thank you. Thankful prayers keep your focus on my presence and my promises. I kind of started in the beginning. Whispering my name, and whenever you need to redirect your thoughts, you can walk through this day with your focus on me. My abiding presence is the best roadmap available. And then one more. Trust that I am with you each moment, whether you sense my presence or not. A thankful, trustful attitude helps you to see events in your life from my perspective. So one of the things I started when I read that, I'm like, okay, I'm going to start every day writing down three things that I'm thankful for. And, you know, when you think about it right now, you think, whoa, what could you write? But I did. So I'll read something of that right now, one of my thankful things. I wrote, able to be on my own to walk. My story is getting better. Trying to eat more. I know people are praying all over for me. And then they turned my fluids down. That was a big thing that day. But just little things like that. And when I would wake up, there was like 12 doctors all staring at me. And, you know, from doctors to pharmacists and everything. And they'd say, how are you doing today? And so I would say, I'm really thankful that my fluids, I'm thankful that I slept. So I'd always have that. And I think that really, really helped me. And then I had this book where I would read and listen to and then write down the verses that went with it. And that just calmed my heart, really felt God's presence. And then I would put on music, Darling Check. I love Hillsong. So at nighttime, I would put that on while I was alone and it was dark, and or hymn piano music. And I would feel God's presence during that time.
So some of the things we've been working through on God's presence is in salvation, God pursues us, right? He pursues us. We loved him because he first loved us. He pursues us. But in intimacy, God waits for us to pursue him. Like, this is a big, big thing. Christians who have been Christians for a long time will say, I don't know that I've ever experienced the presence of God, because they're waiting for it to happen. When what's really clear is he pursues us to start a relationship with us, to rescue us, to spiritually rescue us and to begin a relationship. But he doesn't force any of us into being intimate with him. Like, we get to choose that. That's one of the one of the big things I think that's become clearer and clearer to Deb and me. And then we just sang about it in the words of the songs. We were singing things like this: He knows my name. Do you remember? Maybe that was the first time you sang, He knows my name. He knows my every thought, that says. So this is a big thing, is God's present all the time. It's a matter of if I'm aware of His presence. So that in the last several weeks, we've been looking at this. When we pray, when we sing worship in song together, when we read God's word, when we hide God's word in our heart, any of those, whether are called spiritual disciplines or spiritual exercises or spiritual practices, all they are is avenues for us to know we're in God's presence. That's all they are. It's not a responsibility. Do this, okay? And maybe you'll be better. It's God forming ways that we can come into His presence because He's there. His presence is there. I think this was one of the big things that I saw in Deb from the moment she heard about it, is there's this terrible news, but God's not surprised by it. And He's here. He's here with us. He's walking through this with us every day.
There's a psalm. Did you want to put it on
there? Tell him what it is and Steve will put it up there for you.
Psalm 112, 7 through 8.
You got that, Ken? Psalm 112, 7 through 8.
Okay.
Yeah. Get it, buddy.
If not, I can read it.
Hey, you just keep working on it, Ken. If you get it, that's great.
There was another one that came to me first thing. My first verse was Isaiah 41:10, and it's in the Message Bible. Don't panic. I'm with you. There's no need to fear, for I'm your God. I'll give you strength. I'll help you. I'll hold you steady and keep a firm grip on you.
So, again, if you're going through a crisis and you're a Christ follower, do you understand how important those words are to you right then? I'll hold you steady. I've got you. What was the psalm one, Deb?
The psalm one is, they do not fear bad news. They confidently trust the Lord to care for him, for them. They are confident and fearless and can face their foes triumphantly. So every day I'd read this, Sarah Young, look up the verses, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this verse. And they just spoke so much to my heart that it encouraged me, gave me peace that night, and I felt it was specifically for me.
Yeah, yeah. Just to talk a little bit about the transition from Colorado to here, they told Deb she had no immunity, so she had a mask on, she had gloves on. We were supposed to swab down the surrounding area in the airplane we were in. I had called John Johansson. I said, could you ask the doctors that where's the best place for us to go? And there were two doctors' names that he gave me, and they were both at UW. We didn't know anything more than that. That was just the best that he can. So, of course, I went online, looked up these doctors, and in Colorado, they were trying to narrow down what kind of leukemia it was. And they said, we think that it's ALL, not AML. So I looked up these two doctors, and as I'm reading through, they've done incredible amounts of research on everything in leukemia related, but their specialty was AML. But in Colorado, they were thinking, no, we think it's ALL. A half hour before we left the hospital to rush to the airport to come back, they got the biopsy reports back, and they said, we were wrong. It wasn't the ALL. It was the AML. So we're going to a hospital that they specialize in this. We get through the airport into the airplane, and a young stewardess says to us, what do you think? You're coming in a mask. Sarah and I are like security guards bumping everybody away. They put us together in the back so that we could sit together in the back of the airplane. We're bumping in there, and the stewardess didn't say what's going on or what's your problem or what. The stewardess said, this young stewardess, she said, how can we help you? And I said, well, there's this thing going on. My wife just got diagnosed. We're headed back. It's leukemia. And she goes, okay. They sat us down. She brought another stewardess that was working with her back there. And she said, I want to introduce you to her. And her husband had gone through the battle of leukemia for about 6 or 7 years. And she stood and protected us. Like, I don't think she served anybody in the plane. She just kind of stood there. She went and told the pilot, turn the cabin down as cool as you can and get us there as fast as you can. And then she stayed and hawked us. You know, she called me over a little bit and said, here's some things you need to know about. Like, I checked into these and these organizations really helped us. Like, how does that happen? You know, we get, they told us, don't stop by the house. Go straight to the hospital. UW is great. It's an incredible hospital. But if you walk into their emergency room, it's like, is it called Chicago Fire? Is that the TV show? That's chaotic hospital, you know, and saving lives. That's what it was. There were more security people than patients. And there's this gruff lady at the desk. She goes, what are you here for? And I said, well, we're coming from Colorado. My wife has leukemia. They told us to come in this way. And she goes, I will take care of this. And man, she was gruff. But again, she was an angel to us. One of the doctors came in, and you guys know doctors, right? The doctor said, we don't know that, we've never had anybody come in through the hospital this way. We don't know that we can get you in a room. She came back and said, don't you worry about this. So I don't know if she took him out back and beat him up or what. But then they got us in a room, and I've said this to you guys, church family, before. We got Deb into the room at 6 o'clock, or at 5 o'clock. A doctor saw her at 6. She was on an oral chemo by noon. And then she started getting a heavy dose. That was a Saturday on the following Monday. And then it was just like playing catch up, right? Like, Deb, what did you feel like during that time? Every day you were just kind of, how did you feel?
I remember chemo wasn't as bad. I was like, teaching kindergarten is worse than this so far. And I, you know, I was feeling okay till a certain time, but I was just like every day, okay, what do I got to do? What do I got to do? And he wrote on the board, you know, you will be cured. So what's the next thing I need to do to be cured? And yeah, it was just like, okay, this is. I kind of like that at school.
So that's what I was going to say. How many teachers here? How many teachers? Do you get what she's saying? Like, they're just telling her the assignments for the day, and she's going, okay, I can do that. Like, that was it. During this time, you went through some really hard things and hard times. So can you talk to us a little bit about the hard things and hard times?
Okay. I look at my journal. My journal is like my diary, stones of remembrance thing. So I kind of did some. I think the first one was when he came in and told me I had AML and had to have a transplant. I was on bed rest, or not bed rest, but I had fainted a couple times, so I could never get up on my own. So if ever I had to go to the bathroom, I had to have somebody come. And I remember I had to go to the bathroom so bad after he told me, and nobody was coming. He finally said, get somebody in here and get them to get her out. But it was a lot of information. It was a long time that he told me. But I had peace right away. I didn't cry. I was like, okay, this is another part that God's going to use, and I'm going to be cured. And I know people were praying. I mean, that's huge. I had people all over the world praying for me. And I'm so thankful, because in those times, I needed it. There was times people would wake up at night and pray at a very crucial time. And then when I talked to them, that was the time that I needed that prayer. So I know there were certain people praying right at that time for me. And one of the things that came to my mind as soon as we were coming home from Colorado, Sarah was making a curing bridge for me. And she had me read it, and I looked at the end, and I said, can you just add this? God's got this. And so I kind of said that day, but he said some very encouraging words to me, too, that I could hold on to. He said, you're healthy, and I believe that someday you'll look back on this in a rearview mirror and forget it. I'm like, yeah, but I'm going to hold on to that. And I don't see a problem with a donor. You know, at that time you didn't talk about family. You just said with your blood type, I think you'll find a donor. There's no problem. And then I just kind of closed my eyes and said, God, I need another miracle. And just keep on encouraging me. And I'm going to fight. And I kind of thought about Tim in the cage. And I thought, this hospital room's my cage, or I'm going to be a fighter. So I just kept on looking up at the board. I said, we will cure you, and God's got this. And again, when I look back now, I think, how did I not flip out? But if I didn't have God, I would have.
Yeah. Just to say something that some of you will recognize. Remember, they wanted Deb to keep her weight up. And they did a really good job about her not feeling nauseated. And when we put the word out for that, if you brought flourless cake or Cinnabons or anything really fattening, would you raise your hand? Okay. Yeah. 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 Thank you. Thank you. This was one of Deb's greatest times. They said, you can eat calories and it doesn't matter where it comes from. You keep doing that. And I would come into the room and there would be some Cinnabons there. There'd be this flourless cake from, I think it's Five Forks. Is that where it's from? And I would say, oh, that looks good. And Deb would say, that's not for you. I felt like I was getting a verbal, nope, you can't get that. What were some of the things that you struggled with most? What were some of the moments that you struggled with most, or things that you did?
So some of the struggle moments were, I had a really bad sore on my tongue that just burned, and I couldn't hardly eat anything. So Tim would make all these little shakes for me and he had all this stuff that he would do, and it really helped. Had a lot of protein in it. Remember one night my nose was bleeding, the roof of my mouth had clots coming out, and I was like, what is going on? And then I was supposed to get platelets the next day, and she said, how about if we just get platelets for you right now? I said, yeah, that'd be great. I don't want to do this all night. Another one was, and actually Tim had to be gone that morning for something, and that was up. And they wanted to do spinal to see if I had cancer in my brain. And, I never even thought about that. So they were waiting for my fever to go down. And finally, it had gone down, and she came in, and she's like, we're ready to do it. And I'm like, I'm not ready. This is too much. And Matt was, real calm. It was like, her husband's not here right now. Could we just wait a little while? Could you give her some time? So they did. And I had another nurse that was just so good to me. She came in every day and encouraged me. And was always there to give me good news. And one day she was running down the hall and she goes, we got the thing back. It says everything's clear. You're all clear. And that was huge. But probably the most intense presence of God one night was, I had this rash all over me. I looked crazy. It was this red rash just covering me. I had these blisters all in my mouth, and then I was itching, sore, and then bloody nose, and I couldn't swallow. So the nurse went out, and she said, I'm going to get you some liquid Tylenol, which takes a long time for them to order. So I remember I was just huddled in the bed praying. I'm like, God, I feel horrible. Would you just please help me? And I just prayed. And my sister wrote a book on angels, and I always believed in them. But I never, I was like, yeah, that's good, that's good. Well, it was the first night angels came in my room, and they were just flying around. And I saw them, and I can say exactly what they look like. And they were going in and out saying, we're going to take care of you, we're going to take care of you. And as they kind of just, each one started less intensifying during that time. And by the time the girl came back, I had felt so
so much better. And then what was really kind of neat was Tim had come home that night, and he didn't tell his mom. And at supper, she said, "I was praying that angels would minister to Debbie." And then my sister, I called her because I wanted her to know. And she said, "I was praying for you all week that angels would come and minister to you." And she said, "What does it look like?" And I said, "It was just like this gold swirl." And she said, "Yeah, that's what people see." I can just still today just like, it's such a bold picture. And it was just such a God present moment. It was just amazing.
One of the things we regularly experienced was a team of doctors, a medical team coming into the room at the same time. And they would, when Deb was describing this rash, you know, they would come in and you could see them professionally. They're trying not to go, "Wow, that is a big rash." It's all, I mean, it literally started at Deb's shoulders and went to her feet. And think in terms of like what you'd think of a third world country, somebody who's got a disease going on. That she was just completely covered in it. And they would come in and they would say, "Can we look at it?" And they would look at it. And then they would say to Deb, "And it doesn't itch?" And she would say, "No." And you could see the doctors just look at each other. Medical professionals, they would look at each other. But if you're there long enough, you can read a little bit into, they're going in their mind, "Can you believe it? She's not itching." You know, in their head, that's the voice that's going on. And they would say, "So it's not itching, right, Deb?" And she would say, "It's not." And they would go, "Huh, we're not sure why that is." And Deb would say this. She would say, "If you just knew how many people were praying right now." And half of them would go, right? Like, "We know. We know that there's things way beyond anything that we could do."
And that morning, I think that morning when I woke up and I told them what, you know, they're like, "How was your sleep?" And I told them what happened. You know, there were some doctors that I saw go, "Yeah, I got this."
Yeah. When she told me, I thought, "Oh no, Deb has stepped over the threshold and she is fully charismatic now. Like, how's it going to work out between us?" No, I didn't. I mean, it was, if you could have seen Deb's face that morning, like when she described the agony that she was in, which she didn't talk a lot about the hardness, like the difficult things. She didn't verbalize that very much. But she had talked about how hard it was. But then to see her face, you know, and to hear her words, you knew there was this spiritual event that had happened that that was a gift from God to his child, right? Like, again, we hear about these things, we talk about these things, but it's very different when you're fresh, the person's fresh off that experience and they're telling you about it. So that was big. So I guess a big question to me is, you've gone through a lot in this. What's the difference in this idea of God's presence in your life now than before? Or is there a difference? Is there any difference?
Well, I know that I read God's word a lot more. I see things so much differently. I don't take things for granted. I know I need God's word every morning. I need to pray every morning. I know, too, from this, for myself, to other people, how important it is to pray when they have that prayer request. One of the things that helped me and with God's presence when I couldn't take anything in on my own was, I love that people would text me a Bible verse. I have like maybe four people that text me one for over a year every day. They're so consistent, and that meant so much to me. But I had a lot of people texting me Bible verses, and maybe a day I felt so lousy and all I could do was pray. I could just kind of take my phone up, look at that Bible verse, And I loved when people just did a Bible verse, didn't have a question like, how are you feeling? I could just look at that and say, thank you, that was perfect, and put it back down. And that helped me during that time. And so I've learned that, okay, when somebody's going through a rough time, don't ask a question. Just tell them that you're praying and give them a Bible verse. That meant so much because I needed God's word every day. And then this is kind of like on the lighter side. FaceTime was really nice because it felt like people came to visit me one-on-one, and that was great. But the people that couldn't FaceTime me, and mostly I had them FaceTime me at 7 when Tim would have to leave to have some company, and that was really neat, and they would encourage me too. And then the other thing too that was a miracle was, most people don't get a donor right away. And Sarah kept on saying, I hope I'm your donor. It was going to be between Sarah, Matt, and my sister. They wanted family. And Sarah kept on saying, I hope it's me. And for some reason, I thought it might be my sister. And I was kind of hoping it wasn't going to be Matt because he had just moved. So I was hoping it would be her. And then one morning, I think we were on the phone with the hospital or something, and Sarah called and said, he just called me, and I'm the donor. I'm the perfect match. And I don't know that your daughter's going to give you life again. And that's really neat. On the funny side, I'm taking her age now, which I am 36 years old.
There's quite a gap between Deb and myself. Cradle robber has been used a lot since she's taken on the 36. Yeah.
Because now I have 18-month shots. I'm 18 months old, too. So, but I mean, that was a miracle. I mean, that it was, she was so healthy. I was healthy, complete match. And, I'm glad I didn't hear a lot of the stories afterwards, but there are some other people that I know that had it and at the same time. Haven't even got to get to their shots yet because of all the graft versus host or difficult problems. And I never had to go back to the hospital. When I stayed there the second time, they kept on saying, you'll probably be in here for 6 weeks because you'll probably get some kind of infection or pneumonia. And didn't get that. Actually, Matt came in one day and I thought, I'm going to put makeup on. I put makeup on, put my hat on, and the one lady came in. She goes, you look really good today. How would you like to go home in 2 days? And I thought, oh, that was good. And then Sarah was really good at being my person that cut my hair. She cut it a little bit and then a little bit. So we gradually did it, and that was hard. I hate to say it, but I never did want to look at myself without any hair. I'd always just like turn, put my wig on. I just didn't want to have that memory. But she would say, you look the most beautiful I ever saw you, her and Tim. And that was really neat. But they were just such an encouragement to me in the hospital. Sarah came up so much and did whatever for the bone marrow transplant. And Tim came up every day when I go to medicine. I keep on saying, wow, that was a really long drive because I loved it. And that was a great time for both of us in the hospital to pray and be together and know that God was going to use this. And God had that. And it was, I mean, not that I wouldn't trade it for anything. I know if God's using it, it's going to be a great thing. But it was hard. I mean, there were some very hard times, but I can't imagine if you didn't have God and believers praying for you. Like, our church family was just so encouraging, and so many people. That's why I made it through, and God just continually was with me.
So I'm going to ask the question. Some of you tell me, so Deb and I don't have to be the ones that answer this. Deb had a specific prayer request about her hair when it grew back. Does anybody remember what the prayer request was? Bonnie, what was it? Well, wavy, not curly. because she didn't want to deal with curls. Wavy, not curly. What was the other thing? Reddish and thicker, right? So the reddish, we could take care of it if we need to. So that was kind of a wasted prayer thing, I guess. But we couldn't do the other things, right? We couldn't make it wavy and we couldn't make it thicker. What's your daily complaint now about your hair, Deb?
Too curly.
And too?
Thick.
Too thick.
When
too
I curly. Wake up, I look like a troll. I mean, it just goes straight up.
No, she doesn't mean she looks like a troll, okay?
I do.
She means her hair is going straight up like, I don't know,
troll.
One of those pixie dolls kind of thing. You know, it goes straight up and she'll go, and I'll go, you asked us to pray for this. Right? Let's be specific. I'm going to close in just a second because we've gotten to that place where we'll close. But I'm wondering, and this could throw Deb for a curve, but I don't think it will. Do you have any questions for her? Like, is there anything that you want to ask her about? Did we cover, like, the general stuff? I guess I go back to this. Deb felt from the beginning God was going to heal her, and she told me that. And she wanted me to say the same words to her, right? She wanted me to say, God told me you're going to be healed. And so she would say, what is God saying to you? And what he said to me was very different. What he said to me is, I love the way that God's Spirit words it. He said, will you let me walk with you today? And will you trust me with Deb's tomorrow? And so when Deb would say, man, I hate that you have to make this drive to Madison. Man, it wasn't, trust me, it was not hard. Like driving up to see her, be with her, which our church family allowed me to do that. Like, I hate to say this, but I didn't think about anything church related for over a year. Because I knew you guys were blessing us with that. Every day, I'd say, yes, I would let you walk with me. And every day, I felt this peace, not that Deb was going to be healed, but that God knew exactly what was going on, and that was what was going to happen. He knew why. He knew what. So I felt an incredible peace about that. Any of you have any questions that you want to throw out? Bonnie?
There was one time I think Satan really worked on me. It was in February when I had to go in for the 100 day, and that was a huge day, and my numbers had really dropped, and they were going to do the bone biopsy, and I was like, I was just crying, and I just did not feel good about that day. So I was doing my puzzles that morning, trying to distract myself. I was writing up hymns and everything. And then we went, and then we were in the waiting room after I got my blood, and the one nurse came running in. She goes, look at your numbers. They're great. I don't even know if he has to do a biopsy on you. And, again, I put on Facebook, please pray. This is scaring me today. That was one.
One of the times, Bonnie, was when she was going to go back in the second time for the transplant. Her birthday happened to be just before we went back in. And so any of you have been through something that serious, like questions come into your head, like, is this my last birthday? So how are you going to enjoy your birthday when the thought is that? And she went and took a bunch of tests, and one of them was a breathing test. And the technician said, you didn't do very good on this breathing test. And that was one of the things Deb was pretty sure she'd do well in because she has been running for so long. And so she came out and she was pretty shattered by it. And we went through a day of testing. And then I stayed with the primary doctor because there were some questions I had. And Deb went out with an administrative nurse. And the administrative nurse, I didn't know it was going to go through that thing of, you know, when you go through this surgery, you know, it could be life-threatening, you know, all this serious stuff. So Deb was in that conversation while I'm here, and I walk into the waiting area, and I could see in Deb's face she was shattered. And when we left that day, she said, I don't even think they're going to be able to do the biopsy. I think when they finish these results, they're going to say, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do. Like, we tried our best, but there's nothing we could do. So that was a hard time. Coming home at Christmas, she went to her first store, and I came in, and she was crying, and I said, why are you crying? And she said, I feel like everybody's alive around me, and I feel like I'm just a specter observing life. you know. And that's hard. Like she's telling me, I know it's terrible, but I've never been in that spot. And this is where it was huge that, like, I could love her, I could support her, but I could not be, I couldn't bring the peace of God. Only His presence could bring that. Like, do you understand how helpless you feel? Like, you want to take care of it, and you cannot. And then you go to, but God loves her completely, right? And He can do this. He can do this. And that was like huge lessons.
Can I have my teacher moment?
Yeah, go ahead and have your teacher moment.
Okay, I'm a teacher. I have to bring visual. So this was my tray of all my medicines. When I came home, it filled this tray. I mean, they were like stacked on here. Tim had this little, I mean, he had to figure it all out. I was like 11 at least a day, I don't know, and C. diff medicine. And so he'd have this sheet and try to figure out what I was supposed to do all week. And it was huge. And then now, I thought I brought the box this morning, but I'm just in the little box and I take two pills a day for just not getting shingles and chickenpox, so that they said they don't know about the shot yet for transplant patients. So I'm down to two pills for shingles and chickenpox. So that visual in my mind is just something else when I look at this tray all the time. I think, wow, God did a miracle.
Yeah, it was packed. You know, we wanted to finish up on the presence of God. I really wanted Deb to share. And I told her, you don't ever have to do this. And she said, you know, I feel like I can do this. And then a third thing that we wanted to accomplish was we just wanted to somehow, you know, tell you thanks. I don't want to say it was easy in the sense that Deb's going through this terrible thing. But going through this terrible thing, like every day, I felt like, all I had to do was take care of Deb, like figure out everything I possibly could. So thank you for that to our church family and then to our friends that have been friends for a lifetime. Some of you, when you do see me speaking and as a pastor, you just kind of go like this because you knew me way back in the day and you're thinking the last thing he is ever going to be is a pastor, right? And what you don't know is when you're looking at me like that, I'm looking back at you going, I can't even believe they're in a church, you know. So we got it going both ways, right? But, man, to say God is good and we can trust Him without even knowing the answer, we can trust Him. And then our brothers and sisters in Christ, man, you flooded us. Like, you literally flooded us. And when I go up to UW, oh, so you want to give them the news from this last week? Did you tell them or did I tell them this? We're supposed to be every 3 months. Deb went in this last time, and what did they say to you?
6 months.
Yeah.
And that might even be my last time.
Yeah.
So
but, yeah, it's huge. But we wanted to show appreciation to the nurse team and the doctors, and so we asked for something, and we got so many cookies. Have you been to UW? They have a valet service there. That's just constant. Like it's packed because they have so many. There's probably 20 people in the office at one time. We had so many cookies that we took them to the valet. And when I go there, when I walk by, one of the valet will go, "Hey, how you doing?" Like the cookie guy, right? The cookie guy. So you blessed and planted seeds that we don't even know completely what God's going to do with them. Really thankful for that. Let's end with prayer, okay? It's a good place for us to end. And God's presence is here. Are we going to experience it? So let's all stand. And I'm going to ask if there's something in your life that's bigger than you. A lot of times it's medical things. If there's something in your life that's bigger than you can take care of, or it's bigger than all of us could take care of. So I'm saying, no, you can stay up here, Deb. Yeah. You wanted to do this? Let's do it, okay? It's bigger than you, and you know only God can take care of that. So it's something in your life or it's in the life of somebody that you love. You desperately love them. But it's bigger than you can handle. It's bigger than they can handle. It's bigger than we can handle. You got that? It's bigger than this. Only God can do a work in that. So if that's in your life or the life of somebody you love, you desperately love them, would you put your hand up? It's okay. If you're visiting with us, it's a regular thing for us. So it's not shocking for us. So put your hand up and put it up high. It's bigger.